Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. 8 days until midterm election day 2014. We're down to the single digits now, Jim. So we're looking at the polls, and we're looking at the final messages from different candidates, and we're also paying a little bit of attention to some of what their surrogates are saying, particularly if those surrogates are likely to be running for president and possibly the party's nominee in 2016. That's exactly what the story is with Hillary Clinton stumping over the weekend for Martha Coakley, as we highlighted late last week. Martha Coakley is doing a fabulous job of once again finding a way to lose in a deeply blue state. We'll find out if that actually comes true on Tuesday. But Hillary Clinton in the home state of Elizabeth Warren definitely sounding a lot like her and a lot like President Obama from 2 years ago in talking about how jobs are created.
Don't let anybody tell you that, it's corporations and businesses that create jobs. You know, that old theory, trickle-down economics. That has been tried. That has failed. It has failed rather spectacularly.
And Jim, heading into that, she was talking about why we need a minimum wage hike, and she was trying to say that it's not true what Republicans say about minimum wage increases costing people jobs at the low end of the economic ladder. So she's not only talking about that issue, which really does pull pretty well with most people, but she's once again parroting the talking point that businesses don't create jobs somehow.
You really wish that Hillary Clinton did more sit-down interviews with less friendly interviewers. So when she said something like that, somebody could say, so who does? Well, the government. Is the plan for the federal government to hire everyone? But that really kind of says, I think George Will would say something like it stirs the erogenous zones of the Democratic Party, in that it kind of suggests that corporations are only something bad, right? They just spoil the environment and, somehow take money from their workers. Never mind the fact that, their workers, they pay their workers and such, and sell products to people that people like and buy, enjoy their lives. And because the difference between a big corporation and a big government is that you have some choice in whether you purchase the products of that big corporation, as long as they're, not a monopoly. Government has a monopoly, and the federal government is a particular monopoly, because even if you have a really abysmal, terrible state government, there's always the risk that you'll say, to heck with this, I'm moving somewhere else, as quite a few people have done from some of these northeastern states and Illinois and places like that. With the federal government, you don't have that option. And the lack of competition, the fact that there's nobody else out there trying to do a better job, kind of shows in the way they interact with people all the time. It's just interesting that she felt the need to reach that point, to kind of echo the you didn't build that line. And what's also kind of intriguing is how, everyone in the crowd obviously nodded and agreed. Like, it's just an article of faith amongst Democrats that corporations and businesses don't create jobs. I guess it's sort of like the immaculate hiring, right? It just kind of people get hired at jobs through magic or something like that. They wouldn't be saying this if they weren't seeing something either in their polls or their focus groups or some sort of interaction with voters that made people agree with them. I think this is something maybe on the right we have to take a little bit more seriously. I once speculated, Greg, who do you think the most famous boss in America is?
I don't know, Trump?
Okay, pretty decent choice. I would have said Lumberg. Yeah, if you could come in on Saturday, that would be great. And obviously, it's just, everyone laughs at that. My suspicion is everyone laughs because they've had at least one boss that reminds them of Lumberg, who is abusive and arrogant and out of touch and ignores and insults his underlings and his. So I wonder if the impression of America's employers, of America's business, comes from everybody's worst boss. And if that's the case, that's really a dire thing for this country. Because obviously, I don't think a company should necessarily be judged by their worst employee. And then two, I don't think it's good for Americans to go through life with this not so subtle love-hate relationship, or mostly hate relationship, with the people they work for. And while not everybody has an ideal job or the job they want, if you go through life thinking your employers are out to rip you off and treat you badly, I just have a hard time seeing you thriving in your career if you see every interaction as a potential threat or a potential abuse or a potpotential problem there. So as much as, Hillary going off the deep end and insisting businesses are bad, I mean, if businesses don't create jobs, Hillary, Why did you speak at Goldman Sachs for $400,000?
That's right. And for those of you wondering, how in the world is this the good martini? Well, Hillary Clinton's likely to be the Democratic nominee. And right now, she's feeling a little bit of heat from her left flank. Elizabeth Warren has been rumored to run. She's suggested that she won't be running this time. There's Bernie Sanders out there. I don't think the Clintons are too worried about Bernie Sanders. But for some reason, Hillary Clinton protecting the left flank, but she's throwing soundbites out there for whoever the Republican nominee is in 2016 to have a pretty effective argument that Hillary is not going to be the middle-of-the-road Democrat that she'll obviously try to pretend she is once she gets the nomination, if she gets the nomination.
What's really kind of intriguing is you can tout the candidate you're out there to talk for, or you can help yourself for 2016. It's hard to do both simultaneously. And surprise, surprise, Hillary can't quite strike that balance.
All right, on to the bad martini now, and this is truly bad news. This is from a piece by Michael Hirsch for Politico magazine. When President Obama, after months of equivocation over how to respond to the takeover of parts of Iraq and Syria by radical militants, announced in September that the United States would lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat, the White House swung quickly into action, sending proposed legislation to train and equip Syrian rebels to the Capitol that same day. Unfortunately, the White House failed to consult with the Pentagon, which would be doing most of the rolling back on the timing or details of the announcement. Jim, there are also components of the president's September 10th address that were never vetted by the Pentagon. And essentially, this article goes on to talk about how this president essentially refuses to consult even with his own cabinet secretaries because the inner circle is so tight. They've got this little kid soccer mentality of at the National Security Office of running from one issue to the other rather than having a cohesive strategy on all these issues at once. And here's probably the most damaging line. To his critics, and I spoke with several for this article inside Obama's administration as well as recent veterans of it, it's all a reflection of the slapdash way a president so vested in ending wars has embraced his new one. So, Jim, if it looks like they don't know what they're doing and they're constantly in reaction mode, it's because they are.
Yeah, I was going to say, Greg, when you nominated this as our second martini, it is definitely a bad martini. Traditionally, we try to have one that's somewhat surprising. And this one really isn't. Because you know, people may know that I am on Twitter probably much more time than I should be. And when I'm feeling lack of inspiration, it's a very simple, basic way to get a decent amount of reaction. It's to point to whatever foreign policy crisis is blowing up this any particular day. And Lord knows there have been plenty. I have a great picture of John Kerry and Chuck Hagel smiling. They're at some sort of restaurant or bar, and they look like they're having the best time. I said, don't worry, America, we've got this. There's a reason. Everybody felt a certain sense of anxiety or cringing when we saw the foreign policy lineup for the Obama administration. And by, you know, there are conservatives who had gripes, obviously, with Hillary Clinton and with Leon Panetta, and, you know, not everybody liked Robert Gates, but they were all pretty serious guys and gals in that case. Like, they, you know, they seem to have a slightly more clearer grasp on things. I mean, now, partially because of Benghazi, partially because of other things she has said and done, no one takes Susan Rice seriously anymore. She will go out and say whatever the president needs the people to think is true, regardless of whether it's true. The attacks were started by a YouTube video and things like that. Kerry, you know, you can just run down the line. And I think you're right. I think what's really increasingly clear in this second term is how little Obama, never mind, relies on his cabinet, how little he interacts with his cabinet, kind of sees them as these far-off non-entities in the policymaking process. And it's just, you know, this is no way to run an administration. I think it says something about Obama that he, you know, like one of them was a holdover. One of, you know, Hillary got Secretary of State in order to keep her from making trouble. The appointees are fairly uncreative. They're usually, you know, plucked from Capitol Hill, and they're all kind of, you know, they're kind of people who'd be on the short list. They frequently are from the Senate, so it's easy to get approval for them. But they're not particularly good managers, and this certainly is not a very cohesive team in this second term. And you know, guys, this is a crisis moment. This is a time when everybody has to put on their A game. And I think what's really terrifying is the possibility that this is their A game.
I don't know why I'm laughing at that, but
you have to laugh, because otherwise we'd be crying and heading into our bunkers.
We would be crying. All right, on to the crazy martini now. And as we mentioned, we're 8 days before the midterm elections. The American people at this point really don't want to think that much about 2016. Obviously, potential candidates in the national parties are, but they really don't want to look that far ahead, and they certainly don't need to hear what we've heard on Sunday. For ABC's This Week program, John Carl, great White House reporter, spoke with George P. Bush, son of Jeb Bush. George P. is running for Texas Land Commissioner. Somehow that didn't make the headlines out of this story. Instead, it was this question and follow-up about his dad's political future.
So is your dad going to run for president?
I think he's still assessing it.
Do you think it's more than 50%, less than 50%?
I think that it's more than likely that he's giving this a serious thought and moving forward.
More than likely that he'll run?
That he'll run. If you had asked me a few years back, I would have said it was less likely.
So the family will be behind him 100%?
The family will be behind him 100%.
If he runs is the end of that quote. So, Jim, I don't think a lot of people would be surprised if Jeb Bush got in the race, but just because America clearly has Obama fatigue doesn't mean the Republicans are going to have a great winning message by saying, oh, we might have another Bush in there.
Bush versus Clinton in 2016. Can you feel the excitement, Greg? Yay, fresh faces and new energy. Let's turn the page for a new era in America. Yeah, it's bad. Because here's the thing. I don't begrudge John Carl for asking.
Sure.
I don't begrudge George P. for his answer, which appears to be a very careful, measured answer. And also probably an honest answer. In the end, guys, we have a very clear midterm message. And saying, hey, let's restore the Bush dynasty is really not doesn't jive well with this. Washington has gone wrong, and it's time for new faces. It's time for the Dan Sullivans of the world and Joni Ernst and some of the reform-minded congressmen like Tom Cotton and Cory Gardner. Hey, let's change Washington. And I don't think Jeb Bush is going to have a challenging time being the candidate of change. And maybe it's holding his family name against him too much. Sometimes life is not fair, and it may not be fair for Jeb Bush. He does have some very impressive things in his record as governor of Florida. The problem is the two topics that really seem to stir Jeb Bush's heart the most are a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants and Common Core. And if you wanted to get your average conservative grassroots voter madder than heck, those are the two buttons to press, and you will drive them crazy. They'll be furious with a great deal of good reason. So I would just urge the Bush family, can you I know George P. is running, but he's running in Texas. He's running in Texas as a Republican and as a Bush. So I think he actually had a swearing-in ceremony last month. yes, technically the election is later this month, but nonetheless, under those circumstances, he's going to win. So Bush family, just take five. Just take a couple of days, relax, take it easy. After the election, we can start hashing out the 2016 stuff. We just need to go until Tuesday of next week, people, unless there's a Georgia runoff and unless there's a Louisiana runoff. But at some point, the midterm elections will end, Greg. That's our real good martini of the day.
Yes, for all of us involved, certainly. Jim, great start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.